To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction. All right, you heard the song. You know who we are. It says, this is going to start with, it comes off a very low bass line. My name's Don.
Al.
And Rook.
And we're back again.
Back again.
For the comic book entertainment.
Now, one time Al asked me, and I always said no.
Can I say it? Don?
He always asked if I've ever bought any of the new Archie books.
You never have you?
Never have.
Till now.
Till now.
The Archies, with a cover by Hernandez.
Yeah, I was in visiting my daughter. She took me to Second Charles, which is a really awesome bookstore.
Oh, you bought it up north, huh?
Yeah, they have comics. It's kind of weird. South Carolina is still north to us. It's in the south.
Everything's north, except but, Key West and Miami.
It's a really nice store I enjoy going to. They have a big comic section. I love the Hernandez brothers. Jaime Hernandez did the cover. And I thought, well, that's neat. The Hernandez brothers, both of them were influenced by Archie Comics. You know, Dan DiCarlo, Harry Lucy, and those guys. So I thought, all right, I'll pick it up. And this is basically a story, not by the Hernandez brothers, but I liked it. And it's about the formation of the band.
Where's Hot Dog?
He's not in it. The Archies, I don't know if they ever had a band before the cartoon show came out. But, you know, Archie and Reggie were always arch nemesis, and mm-hmm. I never understood why Reggie would be in a band with Archie. You know, in the comics, Reggie was always richer than Archie, you know, had a massive ego.
It's the easiest way to steal girls from him, be in the band with him.
Well, that makes sense, too. I never thought of that. Where were you when I needed you? But in this book, it was kind of interesting, because, you know, Archie and Jughead were friends, and they had a band. And then he was trying to put it together. They have auditions for people coming in. None of it works out. I've never been in a band, so I've never seen it the same way. But a lot of people I've worked with have had bands or been in bands or played with different people. And at one point, I just asked these guys talking, I said, is it hard to stay in a band? And they both looked at me, shook their heads like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but think about it, you know, dynamics of people and everything else. And even if you have a band that gets together, sometimes work and life steps in the way and you can't get together.
You mean like in podcasts?
No, yeah, podcast is...
It's hard to get everybody
the whole band together. And then you got personalities and egos and different points of view.
Life interrupts your fun.
But that was really interesting. Finally, Archie was kind of giving up because he was trying to do these songs that nobody wanted to do. And then Betty and Veronica showed up. They were friends, and he didn't know that they did it. And it made sense why Veronica would have a keyboard all of a sudden.
Why?
And then,
why does it make sense?
Well, because basically it was just a small keyboard, like an 80s toy or something.
Yeah.
And they came, and Archie wasn't expecting it, but they were both coming as singers, even though Veronica did play some keyboards to it. So they were putting this thing together. Then it goes on, Archie gets upset because they're not doing it the way he wants, and the girls get mad and leave, and they join Reggie's band. And Archie feels bad about it, like he's really blown it. And then basically Reggie's an egomaniac that wants it his way, and you're everybody looking at him. The girls get upset. So finally, the rest of it shows how that band gets together and how Reggie kind of comes in because of the girls. And I thought, well, that actually kind of makes sense.
What about Jughead?
Well, he was the drummer the whole time. He's Archie's friend.
Oh, okay.
Even though they got in the fight. But I don't know.
I like how Archie's wearing a Josie and the Pussycats in the first panel.
Yeah.
T-shirt.
There's an issue of Archie where he married one of the Josie and the Pussycats.
Valerie.
I gotta ask, because I just figured this out. Apparently there's a TV series called Riverdale.
Yeah, it's on the CW.
Yeah, you've talked about it.
I haven't watched it. I don't know when it's on, but it's on.
Yeah, I don't know. I just,
like, Miss Grundy's hot, and Archie's having an affair with her, and other weirdness.
That's gross.
She's hot, though. She's hot.
Yeah, it is messed up, but
That's the same guy who wrote Afterlife with Archie, the zombie Archie, so...
Well, yeah, Al gets upset because all of his time is spent on the TV show, so Afterlife with Archie's gone on hiatus.
But he's kind of... But the guy is doing more comics now. So a friend of mine knows Robert Hack, the Sabrina artist, and he says he's getting scripts now, so he's back on the...
You know, that happened... I read that Silver Surfer that Mike Allred's doing and Dan Slott's writing. It's, Dan Slott was on Word Balloon talking about it. I guess he's writing all the Spider-Man books, which Marvel must have 200 Spider-Man titles.
At least 200.
And he's, I think he's writing a lot of them, and I don't know if other people are writing, he's coordinating and overseeing them, or if he's writing them all. But he's still writing Silver Surfer, but those scripts are coming out really infrequent because he doesn't have time. And I guess Mike Allred was kind of excited. It's strange he was talking about because Mike Allred's been on Silver Surfer longer than any other title. Because, you know, he does so many and then he has to go somewhere else.
He just did something that you... I'm surprised you didn't see it there. Maybe they didn't have it. Mike Allred drew Batman 66 meets the Legion of Superheroes. And it's the old Legion with Pharaoh Lad and those guys.
Well, Mike Allred did it?
Yeah, he drew it, wrote it, inked it.
Well, no, I won't.
It just came out. It should have been. You didn't look in the DC section, did you?
Oh, I did, but I just looked at these.
Yeah, it just came out.
He's doing a young animal book called Bug. His brother's writing it, and he's drawing it. Bug was
doing a lot of work then, I guess.
Bug was a character I never knew about.
He's from
New Gods.
Weren't we just talking about this recently?
Bug?
Was he?
Maybe you showed it to me recently then. Yeah. But I feel like you and I talked about this.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so, but I could. Bug was... He was from the New Gods, but I read New Gods, but I didn't read every issue, and I never saw that character until Jim Starlin and Mike Mignola did that Cosmic Odyssey from the late 80s, which I loved. And Bug, his name was Forager. And Orion always referred to him as Bug, and he had to team up with Batman. And in Cosmic Odyssey, at the end, he died. And Orion said, "Who knew the Bug had him in him?" And then Batman just
plucks
him.
He's Ambush Bug, but he's not Ambush Bug, is he?
He's from the New Gods.
No, Ambush Bug is totally different.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, very, very different.
But Batman clocks Orion and said, "His name was Forager." And anyway, Allfather sends Orion to bury Bug on his planet, says, "I think you need to learn some humility." But and that was it. So Bug was dead. Anyway, in this one, he's not. And I just bought it because I like Mike Allred. You know, the stories are neat. And it ties in to all kinds of stuff. It's basically, he finds this girl that doesn't talk, that kind of has zombie eyes, you know, and she has a talking stuffed animal. And the stuffed animal's basically telling Forager...
You didn't buy those today, then.
No, I bought them...
Oh, I thought you bought them today. Oh.
No, I bought them at Wilson's, of all places.
The dollar bins?
Nope. Bought them off the rack. And it kept my interest. And then later, they're looking for... Jack Kirby did one issue for the first issue special. It was the first one called Atlas, which is a book I really enjoyed. And they basically were supposed to write in to see if he wanted to do any more. Nobody ever did, or they just never had any intention to do it. To me, I really enjoyed that book. I enjoyed the idea of it. It basically, the story was that his parents were killed by slavers, and the slaver, I guess, found Atlas. Atlas was a small boy, but he was strong, and he knocked the slavers out, ran away. And this guy's hiding in the reeds, and he pulls him down and says, "Be quiet." So he holds him, and then when the slavers are gone, Atlas knocks this guy out. And then he finally says, he goes back to his hut, and he says, "Well, everybody's gone. They killed him. You know, they took him and killed him." And he says, he went in and pulled out this big jewel. And he says, "This means I'm the leader now." So basically, Atlas goes with this old man. And the old man had lived in this kingdom that was run by wizards. And Atlas grows into a man. They show it in three panels how he grows, and he becomes this champion. This guy's always with him, and then the story ends with the guy taking Atlas to this kingdom. when he finally gets to the kingdom, he sees the head guy there, and it's that slaver that Atlas knocked out. And that was the end of the series. Well, in the bug, in this series bug, the girl with the stuffed animal is basically, they have to stop that wizard, which was the wizard that was with Atlas. And I thought, wait a minute, he wasn't bad. And I'm reading it, it seemed like there's a lot more story to it. I'm thinking, are these issues that I've missed at some point?
Well, this, you're talking about this guy, right? That's Desaad, isn't it?
Yeah, Desaad.
Yeah, that's Darkseid's right-hand man.
That might be it. See, I'm misreading this thing. Thanks, Rook.
Yeah. Desaad is Darkseid's, like, little... I don't know that you can really call him right-hand man. It's more
he was more of the new god things.
Yeah, more like Darkseid's, like, bitch boy.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was... No better way to put it. He was basically second in command there, you know.
Well, no, not really. Because Granny Goodness would have been more second command than Desaad.
That's true, isn't it?
Desaad was like his little science monkey. It's like, go make me things, you know?
Yeah, those
and,
were
and
disturbing.
And he would beat the crap out of Desaad. And, I mean, Desaad really got the short end of the stick all the time. He got blamed for every loss.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, those comics are really disturbing when you're a 10-year-old kid reading them, when I was. And Granny Goodness is something that just frightened me to know.
Oh, Granny Goodness was just she's still horrific. She's such a horrible character.
You know, she
and
was
horrible as in like a horrible person, not a horrible character. You know, yeah, she's messed up.
The Superman series, the animated Superman series that Bruce Timm did.
Mm-hmm.
They had the new gods at the end of that series, and then they were in the Justice League cartoon. And they got Ed Asner to do the voice of Granny Goodness.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
It was perfect.
Did you ever read the Superman Darkseid when he landed on Apocalypse?
No, I've heard of it now.
I've got it if you want to read it.
I would like
to. Yeah, yeah. I finished reading Red Son, and somebody was like, oh my God, you like Red Son, you'll love this. It's so much better.
Yeah.
It's like... no, it's not. But it's still pretty good. I gotta admit, it's still pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard of both of those.
Yeah.
But this series is really good. And Atlas shows up in it. I really enjoyed it since to me it was an obscure character that I remember very fondly from one issue.
Yeah.
So anyway, I've got three issues of it. It's fun, but I didn't realize he did a Legion of Superheroes.
It just came out. Batman 66 meets Legion of Superheroes.
I'm gonna have to find that now.
I'm surprised they didn't have it at Wilson.
There's so much new stuff happening.
They didn't have it recently.
Yeah, one shot. You got to get it now. Man.
Hey, Wilson's what they do, I noticed, is like the Young Animal books, except for Cave Carson. They had them for like, you know, 3-4 issues, and then he stopped sorting
them.
Yeah. Which is fine. He tries books out, so I get a chance, but then if I really
DC,
want them.
Well, DC, he's still going to buy a couple of issues of it, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't subscribe to them, but I should.
You should, but you don't have to. You're not being forced to, you know. But anyway. Okay, let me talk about another one of these books here that I got last time at Wilson's. G.I. Combat, number 154. Dollar. Pretty good shape for a dollar. This is actually the book. When I was standing in line, I saw the back of this book. I saw this ad. I go, and this was from like 30 feet away. I go, I know that ad. That's an old book.
Yeah, it's an old, yeah.
Let's go take a look, shall we?
You know, one thing, I had every one of those model kits.
You did? I never had these.
These, they sold them in the grocery stores. They were snap tights, and they were cheap.
Oh.
They bought them in the grocery store. They had a little bin with four of them. And I bought one, snapped it together. My friend had so much fun that every time I got a little bit of spare change, I rode my bike over there, bought the next one. My friend had them. My brother ended up getting them. I think they were $1, $1.50 each. And they were a blast.
See, I never liked the snap-together model, but I like the ones that you glue, because afterwards I liked the glue. It was really good. That tester glue.
I had some of those too, but those...
I'm just kidding.
I remember those.
Because you know what happens. Kids were huffing that stuff. You know what happened? No, but you know what happened, right? It was horrible. Kids were buying the glue... And they were huffing them. They were getting wasted.
Yeah.
So then
you can't even buy that stuff anymore now without an ID. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
it used to be they had it when you went to the toy section where the models were. They had a little cup full of those tubes.
Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't an issue. And they weren't packaged. They were just a tube, and you bought it. And then I started reading in the paper. Dad was talking how kids would pour the airplane glue into plastic bags and breathe it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And next thing you know, you go to these stores, and where's the model glue?
You got to get your mom to buy it for you.
Yeah, you had to get your parents.
But then testers did this horrible thing. I mean, I got a great idea. We're going to have a non-toxic glue, and we're going to give it a lemon flavor. So they had, I'm not kidding you, it was a lemon-smelling glue for your models. So you go, oh, okay, so this is not going to get me high, I can buy it. And then now all my glues smell like stinky lemon. This is not a lie, you know what I mean? So it's
the smell doesn't go away.
I don't think it ever went away. Maybe now it did after 40 years or something.
It only took a little while.
Don't you remember the lemon-scented tester's glue? It was horrible.
No.
Oh, yeah, man, it came in like a yellow bottle, and you were like, oh, okay, so yeah, anyway, I'm just joking around that. So anyway, so I see this book, I go, okay, this is in actually pretty good shape. I'm surprised they had it in the dollar bin, but he probably paid nothing for it. So I go, okay, 25-cent, giant size, 52 big pages for 25 cents, DC, 1972, I gotta get it. The first story by the late, great Sam Glanzman, who passed away a couple of weeks ago.
It was fantastic.
The fantastic artist, and of course, his specialty... And writer, whose specialty was war. So you got a Sam Glanzman. New story at the beginning here. And then we go to, this was even great, Russ Heath, Frogman story. Fantastic. This is a great book, man. This is just a great book for a dollar. And then we got a Joe Kubert war. Of course, Sergeant Rock. Got to have Sergeant Rock in the book.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, greatness, man. Greatness, greatness. And these books are mostly reprints. And then the last one is John... No, what is this? Is this John Severin? It looked like John Severin. Yeah, John Severin.
The man.
I mean, this is a fantastic book, man. John Severin, Sam Glanzman, Joe Kubert, and Russ Heath. This is, you know... And an ad for Kirby Unleashed.
Oh, really?
The old Kirby fanzine.
Now, that one right there, that article... That picture always fascinated me because this is when Kirby went to D.C., and sometimes they'd always say Kirby's Fourth World. That's where I started hearing it. I thought, what is this? And they'd always talk about it, and I'd always see that artwork there. And I never saw it in any other comic books, but the man could just do a spot illustration and make you think for days, like, what's about these characters? There's all these kind of barbarian underworld-looking creatures.
Yeah, he definitely had a superpower to his art, no doubt about it. But anyway, this was like Kirby's fanzine, I guess, right? He says it's... You know, it was from National Periodicals. Okay, so it was $4, so it was probably too much money for me at the time.
I think that came out, I know there was a portfolio because I saw it, but I think that company that did it, there was some kind of problem that happened financially. But I think some of that stuff does exist and came out, but I think they kind of crashed. I may be wrong.
And then, of course, there's Captain Aurora here, another great ad. With this, I remember playing this game too.
Was
it's
that
like
yard
a,
games?
It's like this ball and a stick. And
oh
it hits
yeah, the mini games. The mini games.
Skittle. They were called like Skittle ball.
That's
Skittle
right.
ball.
Yeah. This is
and they had
stuff.
Skittle pull, which I had. They had Skittle bowling. They had basically anything you could do with Skittle, but it was Aurora. Yeah, they had Captain Aurora. I remember those ads.
But the thing about it is, I remember about these books is, as much as I love the war book, it's like, why aren't these guys drawing the superhero comics? I want to see Kubert, I want to see Heath, I want to see Severin drawing like superhero characters, but their specialty was doing these war books.
Well, I don't think they wanted to.
Yeah,
they probably didn't want to, you know what I mean? Well, so Kubert ended up doing Tarzan after this.
Yeah, you know, Kubert did some superhero work. He did,
well, Hawkman.
They did Hawkman, but I remember he did covers and stuff.
He did covers, but he didn't do that many interiors, so it was kind of like, I wish they would have done some more superhero stuff. Well, he was supposed to do, you know the story, he was supposed to do Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
But Muhammad Ali didn't like his art.
Yeah.
So then they got Neil Adams and then he okayed it and the rest is...
I've seen online there's a cover Joe Kubert did for that. It looks like the Neil Adams. I mean, the same...
It's the same layout, yeah.
Yeah.
He just didn't like his rendering style.
Yeah, which... I could see that. I mean, I like... When I say that, I love Joe Kubert. When I was a kid, I'd see it... I thought they were great drawings, but they always looked sad and haggard, which,
you know,
so I could see why he did that. Neil Adams really did it well, but
He was more commercial artist.
Yeah.
So what do you got there, man? I'm seeing you opening up the marbles. An essential
You had to mention Jack Kirby.
Omnibus.
The Kirby Omnibus featuring Green Arrow.
Yeah, those are great.
I've seen that cover all the time, but I've never actually seen the book itself.
It's awesome. Dude, this thing's so good. I think Dallas may have gave me this as a gift one time.
Yeah, we got all those books.
It's just tons of work. I mean, look at this.
It's all the Green Arrow stories, right?
Nope. No, it's not. It features him. Mm. But towards the back you get into the Green Arrow stories.
Just a lot of the sci-fi and fantasy stuff.
So you get a bunch of Green Arrow in the backside. But no, here, I'll hand you the table of contents and take a look. I mean, you got all kinds of stuff. All Seeing Eye, Thing in a Box, There you go.
House of Mystery stuff,
lots of House of Mystery stuff.
I heard a podcast, these two English guys are talking about it, that they don't think there's ever been any definitive list of all of Jack Kirby's work.
Good luck getting it.
Exactly, but he's done so much.
Yeah, I mean, come on. The family, I don't think, could even give you that list.
Especially stuff in the 40s and 50s.
Well, he was...
He probably did work for places that are long gone, disappeared, and nobody even remembers.
And they destroyed their artwork.
Yeah.
DC used to destroy artwork. I was reading an article with on YouTube. They were talking to Bernie Rising, and they asked him about, did you ever get your artwork back? And he goes, well, not at first, because DC had a policy of not giving back artwork. All of them did, but he was talking about that, DC. And then one day Neil Adams got involved, and Neil Adams went to his lawyer and said, hey, can you do something about getting artwork back? Because these guys are taking it, putting it in a storage, and then when the storage gets too high, they just disintegrate it and destroy it like they did to stuff in the 50s and 40s. So Neil Adams' lawyer basically had met with DC's lawyers, and basically they got together and they go, is this work for hire, or do you actually own the book, or do you own the art? And the lawyer says, I'm like, no, we own the art. And he goes, oh, really? So you bought all, you own all this art. Did you pay taxes on this art? Because, you know, if you own all this, you have to pay taxes. And they're like, oh, no, we don't own it. We just work for hire. And they go, well,
we changed our mind just now, all of a sudden.
Artists got all their artwork back. Yeah, but the stuff that wasn't stolen, because stuff was stolen. And DC actually, back if you were a kid in the 60s and actually were able to go to DC Comics on a field trip, they would actually give you art from, they would give you a piece of original art from the, from that closet of art. They'd go, hey, by the way, thanks for coming here. Here's a Joe Kubert Hawkman page. Oh. Enjoy it, you know? And then the kid would go like,
how many times do you think those kids took that one?
Or colored it.
Turned it into a paper airplane, threw it out the bus window.
But at the same time, I don't even think a lot of the artists thought much of that stuff because it was just...
Frazetta did.
Well, I mean, there were some of them that realized, but
the newer guys did, I think.
I was reading a book about Tex Avery, you know, back in the 70s, and he was talking about him and some of the other animators that when he worked at Warner Brothers doing all those Bugs Bunny cartoons and stuff, he said they just had cells all over the place, and he'd pull up, and all the kids in his neighborhood would be there, and he'd say, hey, kids, and he'd just start passing cells, you know, stacks of cells. Here, take them.
Because he didn't take his work seriously. And, it wasn't until people started taking it seriously that, oh, wait a minute.
Well, he said that one day he pulled up and there was a little girl there who had gave cells to before. And he said, hi, mister, do you have any more Bugs Bunnies? And he said, I thought I gave you a bunch the other day. He said, yeah, my brother took them. Why? He's taking them to school and selling them for 50 cents each. this is back in, I guess, the 50s, when he's saying that, 40s and 50s. 50 cents was a lot of money when I was growing up. That was a fortune then.
That's five comic books in the 50s.
And, but he was just like bewildered. But you know, I've always worked a place where you do page layouts and stuff, and you know, when you're done, you throw them away, you don't think about it. That's kind of the same thought. It was the one that horrifies me. I was working with a woman, we started talking about original artwork, and what I was talking about was, you know, Winsor McCay's Little Nemo, you know, Alex Raymond's Flash Gordon, all that stuff, Crazy Cat. Now, a lot of those guys did have their artwork, but she was telling me stories. They were saying that people at the newspapers, they used to take the pressmen, He used to take a stack of those original drawings together and see how many they could rip at once.
Isn't that great? Yeah, people are real.
And I think it was, I don't know if it was Marvel. It was one of the comic book companies was talking about the lobby was flooding, and they just got a bunch of original artwork and laid on the floor to sop up the
water.
That's great, huh? That's what they think of artists. That's exactly, to this day, that's what they think of artists.
But that's the thing. Sometimes you don't know what you have, and then, you know, that stuff is... And of course, you run into this now where artists get upset when they... Michael Golden was tearing his own artwork up. I was reading about it in the late 90s, which was upsetting Britt, but Michael Golden said once they send artwork back, he just rips it. He was getting upset, and he was talking about this, and he was explaining why he was upset, and I think this is the store I went to in Oklahoma City, because he had a page of the Micronauts when Michael Golden drew it. It's when that character Oberon showed up, and he turned into a centaur, he was half horse. It was a great page, and the guy that owned the store was really happy about it. He said it's one of his favorite pages, and that's why he held on to it for so long. But this guy bought it, and I said, how much you pay for it? Well, he told me it was a lot of money. But he says, I'm going to sell it for more than that. Well, later when I was reading about Michael Golden talking, he says, yeah, there's this one guy that bought a page of the Micronauts and said how much it meant to him, and I wasn't going to sell it. But all right, I'll sell it to him. And the next thing you know, he turned around and sold it for more money than that.
Yeah.
And Michael Golden was upset. Well, it's what, you know, I guess that's kind of the name of the game, but just because somebody buys it doesn't mean they're always going to keep it. They look at it as an investment, and the artists get upset about it. I heard Ramona Freyden say she got tired of doing sketches because she did a sketch for this one boy, and then she walked out in the hallway, and he was auctioning it off to other people. And she goes, you know, I'm putting part of myself into this, and they're just selling it off like it's nothing. Well, not everybody does
now
that.
They charge $100 for sketches.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, if you're charging for the sketches, I mean, you know, you've gotten your...
Yeah, you've got an investment in
it. Yeah, you've gotten your bit out of it, you know. Like, well, just take Tommy Costillo for an example. God, you know, may he rest in peace.
He passed away?
Yeah, Tommy passed away a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
no. Yeah, he did, unfortunately. But when he was sick, what was that, 2 years ago, I want to say it was? I was at an event with my kid. It was a marching band event. And I'm wandering around the property of the school, and all of a sudden I go by this classroom. They have a display in the window of the classroom, Tommy Costillo art for sale. And I was like, what the crap is this? So I took a photograph of it and sent it to him. I'm like, hey, you know about this? I'm at blah, blah, blah high school. And he goes, oh, yeah, totally. It's a friend of mine. No worries. Thanks for watching out.
Jeez.
But you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what if somebody... Because they had a decent amount of artwork in that window. You know, what if somebody had stolen, like, one of his folders or something full of art and, you know, was hawking it?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it may have been a high school, but you just never know.
Yeah, Nobody knew. Nobody knew back then.
Well, back when I was... And the other thing that crossed my mind was the idea of somebody reproducing his stuff and selling it. Because... I'll be honest with you, when I was in college, you know, a bunch of graphic arts students, the Shoney's, I think it was Shoney's, across the street from the college, accepted no coupons, none of any kind, because of us. Because we would make our own coupons and then go over there and eat. You know.
100% off.
We would do things like, you know, buy one meal, get two free, you know, all kinds of crazy crap. So the manager caught on. And so there was a big, like, tabloid-sized piece of paper door. No coupons are accepted
at this location. And now they're out of business.
Oh, yeah, no, they're out of business.
Oh, my God, it was you guys.
Well, Shoney's is up north. Every time I drive up to my daughter's
house. Did they sell Shoney's?
Yeah, I just ate
it.
God,
I love that.
I remember there was one like on the way to Disney, but I don't know if it's there.
No.
There used to be one right up the corner from here. I grew up eating Shoney's all the dang time.
There you go.
Where the IHOP is?
Yeah, it was the same kind of place, isn't it? Wasn't Shoney's like a breakfast place in the morning?
Well, they had all of it.
But they had that awesome salad bar. The salad bar was always the best thing.
Well, that's what we was getting. Shoney's in the morning, it was the breakfast bar you're talking about.
Yeah.
When I'm driving, well, my daughter started going to college in Tallahassee. They had a Shoney's there, which we were thrilled about. And then it was her freshman year. I went there to visit her, and we went to Shoney's and they were gone. And I read all the northern Florida Shoney's were disappeared. But they're still in Georgia and South
Carolina. We stopped and ate at a Shoney's years ago when we went up for my wife's cousin's wedding.
Yeah.
We drove, I don't even know how many hours straight. And we ended up, I want to say in like one of the Carolinas or something like that.
Yeah.
And we met up with the rest of her family who had left that morning. And we had left at like 7, 8 o'clock that night. And we eventually caught up with all of them. And when we got there, somebody said something about, you guys want to go straight to bed? I'm like, I want food.
Yeah.
And somebody's like, there's a Shoney's. I was like, done. Let's go.
But as time, as the day goes forward, they start putting half of the breakfast bar starts turning to lunch. And eventually it's all lunch. And then slowly turns into dinner. I really like it. I eat too much.
Yeah.
Going back to comics. I'm looking at Rook's book. This is the greatest story I've ever read in my life.
The two-dimension
man, the guy's flat looking in the mirror screaming. And that caught my attention, but I'm reading it. They're milking cows. And all of a sudden the guy freaks out because all the cows are flat. And he's like, what happened? He goes, oh, they're fine. I just took away their mass. And he takes them and he's got the cows. He's laying them down
stacking
like cardboard.
The cows on top of each other.
Because they're going to transport them.
You need to take pictures of that page and post it.
This is
that's some funny stuff.
You know, I gotta tell you something though about DC. When they're gonna do a hardcover, I know they do it for size wise, but those old pages are a little bit bigger than the modern pages.
Yeah.
Maybe they should make the book a little bigger to fit the pages because they're cropping the pages off a little bit too much at the bottom. You know what I mean? They need to make the book just a tad bigger so the pages can...
Or a little wider.
Yeah, so the pages can be like... Yeah, a little wider maybe or something. So the, I mean, it's not bad, but you know, I wish they would like get that straightened out. But this is a cool book.
Yeah, it is a really nice book. All of it's good, but that's the greatest.
Stacking Cows, awesome.
This is right before he went to Marvel, I think.
Yeah.
Right before the world.
One of those later stories at the end, it's the House of Mystery. It's got those stone heads, but it reminds me of the Saturn men from Mars and that Journey into Mystery when Thor showed up.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember Gil Kane did a Thor cover, which I really liked, in the 70s, and he had those same heads on the cover.
The Easter Island guys or something?
Well, yeah, sort of. Pointy heads.
Okay.
But they were kind of like it.
Almost like the Moai.
Are we going to take a break?
It's time for music.
Joe Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
And that was Yellow Magic Orchestra. I've always heard about them. I guess you've heard of them.
Yeah, from a long time ago.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, you know, I wonder. So I found the song on the internet. I really like it. How do you know about them?
They had a hit back in the 80s. And don't ask me what name of it was. Yeah, well, they were very popular in their country of Japan, I believe. But, yeah, they had a hit. YMO. Yellow Magic Orchestra. The group that I keep, you know, linking together with was Kraftwerk, maybe. Yeah. You know, Japan, Germany, you know, they were friends. And anyway, similar musical styles, I believe. Yeah, they had a hit. They had a disco hit. I can't remember what it was, though.
The Yellow Magic Orchestra was, when I gathered, it was three men on keyboards, kind of like what you said, Kraftwerk.
Yeah.
The way I found out about him was David Bowie did a movie called, he was in a movie called Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence.
Yeah, sure.
Which is a really, really good movie. And it was David Bowie's one of the characters, but it was another man. Well, the guy that played one of the main Japanese guards was the main guy from Yellow Magic Orchestra.
I keep thinking the name Riki Sakamoto.
I keep thinking that name
was in the band, but...
But I was in the Navy, I was overseas, and basically I was floating around the Indian Ocean for 3 months, completely cut off from society, but...
Why were you floating there? Did you have a raft or anything?
No,
you were on a ship, weren't you?
I was on an aircraft carrier.
Okay, that's a big raft.
But the ship store sold Heavy Metal magazine, and they did a whole article about Yellow Magic Orchestra and Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence. And I read about it, and he was joking about how at one point him and David Bowie, I guess he had David Bowie.
They worked together, I think.
Yeah, but they were friends, but they were in the movie together. And this whole article, and one thing, and this is true, for the little bit that I ever saw in Asian music at the time, it said a lot of the pop music from the 70s, 60s and 70s in Japan was just basically watered down Western pop. When I was in the Navy, every time I go to another country, I would always buy a can of Coke. You know, I want a collection of Coke cans from different places. And I always bought a tape of a local band. That's how I discovered the Hootagurus, you know, when I went to Australia. And but that was the only time I ever bought a cassette tape from another country that I actually enjoyed. I bought one in Korea called Band 2, which, God, it was horrifying.
The Gurus were great, man.
Yeah, they were great, but the Band 2 out of Korea, it was like a guy with a really bad karaoke machine. I'm like, well, what is this, you know? But maybe there was other stuff that I couldn't find because I didn't know, but anyway, the article was talking about West, you know, Japanese pop music was always this, but it wasn't true for Yellow Magic Orchestra. So, like I said, I read all about them. I was familiar. But it was just recent. I started thinking, you know, I never really heard them. So I downloaded a song I found. I put on my iPod, and every time it pops up, I'm like, man, this is really good. They're really good. So there's a lot out there that you don't know. And,
And now you know.
Now I know. So anyway, Yellow Magic Orchestra, the one song we played, I think is fantastic. And Al said they had a hit, which...
I believe they did.
I was in the loop, but anyway,
I could be wrong.
They're big in Japan, and they should be big here. Anyway.
All right, on to the comics.
All right.
So what do you got, Don?
We got another submission. We've all read it. And it's Onishi Press, Anthology 01. They reached out to us on Facebook and gave us a download. It's a sampler. I don't remember how many stories there are. I think four.
Four stories.
And... they're basically eight page stories, and each one also has a cover. So it's basically 9 pages, but it's 8 pages of story with a cover on it. We have Tracy Queen, Lomac, the Giant Warrior Angel, Pack, and Anthropocene Twilight. Am I reading that right?
Close enough.
Anyway,
from what I can see,
it's four different. Some of these, we'll go over it. It has an introduction page with this cat mermaid guy, which I have to admit, it made me laugh. Because I was reading the thing and it caught me, because I think the second says, First, there's Tracy Queen, which has it all. Well, almost. It's got sci-fi, sex, and cyborgs, but I'm not in it. And it made me laugh.
There is a critter in that, her story, isn't there?
Yeah, a talking raccoon.
A raccoon, yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't understand why the raccoon talks yet.
Well, course, and she asked that,
pages,
too.
Yeah,
and, you know, going to that, the talking raccoon was snorting the cocaine. And
yeah.
Whenever you have a talking animal, why is it they always, they're snide and really worldly and know more than anybody else, and where'd they come from anyway? But
I just want to know if the raccoon could talk before the cocaine or after, or is it because of the cocaine? But
was that story set in the 80s or something?
I don't know, but...
Well,
no, wait, actually, was there a date on it?
I don't think so.
No, it says, well, the battlefield thing says somewhere in Iowa, 2012. So,
oh, okay.
That was a few years ago. I don't know that happened in Iowa.
All right, well,
okay.
The Tracy Queen, the first illustration, you know, the cover, it's like a Lord of the Rings type, you know, sword and sorcery thing where she's with a sword with this red Sonya looking armor. The raccoon's next to her in armor with some weird hat, and there's an army behind him. She's holding a banner. And
it's like a cyborg army behind her.
Oh, yeah.
The looks of it.
That's cool. But it's written by Lindsay G and illustrated by J.L. Draco.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I thought, okay. And then I was surprised. It starts off again with her, yeah, somewhere in Iowa, 2012. She's got an army, and they're saying, do you remember we first met? And she's, yeah, I was still so small back then. And then it switches, and next thing you know, it's in modern times.
No,
you know?
It's 3 years earlier.
Yeah, but
it says.
You know, they're basically in a suburb, and she's crying, her mascara's running down, it's raining outside. And she's upset, complaining about her father. I guess she lost a boyfriend because he found out who her father was. She hears something. She gets upset about her dad's going to freak out if somebody's in the warehouse. She's got a glass of wine. She's got a samurai sword she picks up as a decoration. She goes through the security system. And after she gets to her destination, what does she see but Rook?
The cocaine-snorting talking raccoon. So,
okay.
Yeah, there's piles of of cocaine there. And a talking raccoon. They go through this dialogue where he's basically razzing on her because she doesn't do it, but she's got smeared mascara and she's got, which I guess kind of turned into a design. Mike Grell always drew women in the Legion of Superheroes of Warlord with this weird kiss looking women's eye makeup and color. That's what we think. She's got the sword, she's talking to the raccoon. And I'm thinking, okay. I'm kind of giving too much away here because I'd rather somebody actually read the book. But they start talking and they go from enemies and, you know, to they're starting to, you can see the team is coming up. I have to say, and it says to be continued after 8 pages. I will say it looks like this is early work for the person. In the introduction letter, they said they're just starting out. The coloring, I think, is actually, it's rendered and pretty good. It's dark. The drawings, it's good, but I see where it's going to get better. But what blew my mind was, I'm like,
cocaine-snorting talking raccoon?
You know, we were just talking, on the last episode, we're off mic, we were talking about suspension of disbelief, and Rook, you made a comment about, oh, so somebody flying with laser eyes, you know, it doesn't take that. I mean, if you're in a comic book, of course you're going to have a cocaine snorting talking raccoon because you can.
Like you said, know. I want to know more about the fucking raccoon. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was going to say on this. The storytelling on this is strong. And when I was reading through this, next thing, like, what? It stops here? Or what happens? Which is exactly what you want a sampler to do. It wasn't like, oh God, I finally got through this and let's move on. It threw me when it starts out with this John Carter looking, you know, Conan the Barbarian opening. And then all of a sudden it's a crying girl upset about her dad. And then it ends with this. I'm like, well, it stops there. So the storytelling sucked me in, which I will say, trying to do comic books, that was something that always threw me. You concentrate on drawing pinups. You concentrate on drawing characters. And then when you start drawing pages, one, you're trying to come up with a page that has a composition to it, makes sense, but the storytelling is the most important element that I completely missed, even though I heard people say storytelling. It was something I wasn't aware of.
And you just lost it.
No, it's okay. It comes back. It's magic.
I say, it's magic.
So anyway, you move on. They got an ad, which I think we all liked. When I'm reading these, it makes me think of Omni Magazine or Heavy Metal or National Lampoon, because they used to have regular ads in it, and it wasn't the comic book ads. It was always alcohol and their own stuff. I remember National Lampoon always had that French restaurant with a frog with no legs.
That was a cartoon.
It was a cartoon, but how many t-shirts did they advertise stuff?
Yeah, that's not funny. That's sick, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like people eating a French restaurant and a little frog on a cart and then with missing legs.
Have you seen that one?
No, I've never seen that.
It's the funniest thing because...
It's a little cartoon style.
Yeah, he's by the kitchen door and he's like in his little box of wheels and it's just got his front legs and he's looking up at the people eating and they're all uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was Lampoon in the 70s, man.
Yeah, God, that was greatness.
It was.
But then I just remember they had everything, t-shirts, tote bags, you name it. If it had that frog on it, yeah, it was...
God.
That was a strong
image. I remember, that's not funny, that's sick.
It was really funny. Okay, the next story is Lomac, the Giant Warrior Angel, written and illustrated by Miguel Colon. And it's a blue creature with two samurai swords and a really awesome red mohawk. And I guess it's a mother and son.
That opening panel, I'm gonna skip over the cover piece there. Okay. But that opening panel, I really like that opening panel.
I do too.
That right there with the city and the bridge and the streetway.
Yeah, that's New York. That's the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, I really really like that.
I like the colors on that as well. Yeah. Also, one thing I want to go is the lettering, the layout, the way they have all this text in there. But I didn't feel it text heavy. It read well. I like how he's using different colors for the different voices. I guess it's one person, but one's thinking and one's talking.
Yeah.
And I like that. I was never lost to it. Also, in that cover panel, there's also a mushroom cloud in the background. So
something happened.
Yeah. But it starts out with a panel that I think we all like. Then it goes on. The drawings.
One I had a little bit of a problem with the art, but it's not bad. It's good art, but it seems to be like, I don't know, every panel looks like it was shot from the same, almost like the same angle. I mean, I'm looking at it from far away. It does have a sameness to it, and maybe it needs a little few close-ups or something.
But the last page, the panels there are really dynamic. So, again, you know, there's definitely something here.
There's definitely, people that are good.
Compare that last page... To the other fight scene. I mean, that's...
Yeah, the last page has a lot of dynamics to it.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that... I want to know what the hell this thing is. What is this... I'm going blank, sorry. What is the...
The main character?
What is Lomac?
You don't know until you buy
the
book.
Is he a human that mutated? Or?
Well, he talks about that, about how he used to be like them, and something changed, and now he's out of place, but they don't... They're alluding to something. You know something happened.
Yeah.
It basically shows up and there's a group of, I'm seeing four guys.
Like a gang.
Kind of reminds me of a little, almost like Grendel-esque. The Grendel comic.
The way
that this is being approached in the beginning. So, yeah, it's definitely got some air of mystery and stuff. So, that's definitely a cool... cool piece. I dig it.
Well, now I was talking about the drawings. Actually, the drawings, I didn't think were bad. The fight scene I was wanting to go to.
Yeah, it gets a little better on the third page. It starts breaking it up a little bit.
Yeah, but the fight scene actually is pretty good. I mean, sometimes when people draw fight scenes, you're thinking, that's not going to work. This one, when I'm looking at it, they thought the thing through. When the people are fighting, they're using their hips, you know, their stances. How they're moving. The guy choreographed it quite well. And I thought, well, this is believable. And that's hard to pull off. Anyway, the fight's over. He goes on. He talks about, again, he's alluding to more of what he's doing. These guys, I guess he left them alive. And they're saying, we're going to get you. Anyway, he's going on. And then all of a sudden, it kind of threw me. He shows up at a Buddhist monastery, and he says, "Sorry, will you not shelter strangers? However, it's late; you may stay the night." Okay, but isn't that sheltering? But then all of a sudden, there's these armored people inside a bar with, it looks like, three monks, and the story ends there. And I'm going to say the same thing on this one that I said on the other one, was the storytelling, it kept me going. And next thing, what, that's it? Yeah. I wanted to find out what was happening, so I tip my hat to you, because you did pique my interest.
And to be honest, because we should be honest about this, this art is good, but it's not like something you would expect from a Marvel comic, right, or even an indie comic. These guys are starting out. But it does have this. A lot of the stuff shows a lot of promise, and the fact that we're only getting like 8 pages of a story kind of leaves us like either wanting for more, or maybe it's too little to really give a strong, you know, opinion on each story. Yeah. But it's just a little taste of everything.
You know? It's a little taste. It's a sampler. You know, definitely leaves you questioning stuff. So it's
Well done. It when I read this, all I'm thinking is the best is yet to come.
Yep.
You know, the artwork, I see the promise to it. I imagine if you took a publisher or a seasoned professional to show your portfolio, they're going to tell you certain things you need to work on, but it's there. But again, the storytelling is certainly there. All right, then we go to another ad, which I was disappointed. There's no more of this in the book.
Let me discuss that real quick. Children of Gaia, the Great Nations of Rendaria, apparently is a book that you can purchase on Onishi Press's website. So,
really?
Yep. The trade paperback is currently running at $29.99, and you can get the hardcover for $59.99.
Now, they have any interiors you can see? Because this cover is staggering.
It appears to be black and gray.
Yeah.
Some interesting work. I don't know anything about the story, really.
That's a lot of money, man, without being able to see more of it, you know?
Because the cover is staggering, and all the little, I kept looking at this, because all the
artwork the artwork from inside looks very similar, very much the same.
Wow. Anyway, that's just an ad in the book, which...
Now we get to the next story, Pack, which is the same artist as the first one, okay?
It's written by Lindsay G. It's the same,
The art on this is so strong. I really enjoyed the hell out of the art on this one. The mask, I don't really understand why the guy's in the mask. I'm sure that gets explained later on in issues. But as somebody who has worked with dog rescues and, over the years, this one sings to me. I really... beating the crap out of a piece of garbage breeder like this, that's just, you know... literally, the dogs are just there for money and just being mistreated... I really like the way that this one ended.
Okay, good. Yeah, that one, I didn't realize it was the same creative team as that earlier one.
Yep.
It is different.
It is different. So
the colors, the rendering, the layouts, everything.
But, like I said, this one sings to me a bit, you know, the way that, the little story told here about the pup and the breeder and everything. So, this is, yeah, I like this one.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I was kind of upset when I found out what they were doing to the dogs.
Yeah.
And but this was another one. I'm like, what, it ends here? Even though, actually, it is kind of a self-contained...
It is kind of a self-contained piece, but it does leave you with a lot of questions about the character and the reasonings and everything. But I really like Pack.
So
really like Pack.
Oh, that's good. Well, one thing, all three of these first three stories... It left me wanting more, but I have to say, and this is a plus, again, with the storytelling, I keep stressing, I had to go back and, wait a minute, that was fast. They're 8 pages, but they read really quick.
Yep.
And which, again, I can't stress the storytelling on it is good, but God, that's a big difference in the other story. That's something. And I have to admit, I know you said the mask was kind of strange. I kind of liked it.
I dig the mask. I dig the mask. It's a very strange thing. So it looks more like a wolf than a dog.
Well,
so, you know. But overall, like I said, I like the story, and I especially like the ending.
And the colors really go good with the story. And then Rook's, one of Rook's favorite ads. Which...
Yeah, this actually sent me to their website, this the Tarmux Java, the Cthulhu references and everything, the Cthulhu Chino. Which I gotta say, these guys are merching the crap out of their stuff, and good for you guys. You know, you can literally buy all of this stuff, the buttons, the mugs, the t-shirts, the, oh yeah, yeah, good for you guys.
How much did you order?
I have not ordered yet, okay, so I get myself in trouble.
We should, we'll take free samples if you'd like to.
During the music break, we started talking about, the, you know, reviewing this comic and talk about it, and Brooke said, hold on, let me look up their website, because we had a couple of questions on these ads. And then after that, it was a mistake, because we lost Rook for a couple of hours, and that's all he talked about.
It was a couple hours, it was a couple minutes.
If these people did your storytelling, it would have seemed really quick, but they didn't, so it took a long time. No, it was funny, because we completely lost it. Why have we got to finish this show? So it was neat, and the ad did what it was supposed to do. So yep. keep up the work.
Good work.
Okay, and then we're on the last one, which I help me out, Rook. Am I reading this right? Anthropocene.
Anthropocene Twilight.
Okay,
I believe that's what we're looking for here.
It's written and illustrated by Tom Swift Bird. Before I start anything, if that is your real name, thank your parents because it's awesome.
It's a great name.
It is a great name. All right, this is a big difference between the other artwork. It's very graphic, and one thing. I have to say that when I read this, when I finished it, I thought, wait a minute. And I went back and read it a second time. Reading it the second time, I liked it better. I don't like it when a writer artist over-explains every little detail. I like it when you're telling a story and you tell enough of it to give you a scope, but also let you fill in the blanks with your own idea. You know what I mean? I've read sometimes where some people have said that when you do that, they leave the ambiguity. It wasn't a thing on purpose. It's just because the creators weren't good enough to tell you everything you needed to know. Well, I don't think anybody ever builds in ambiguity to it.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's what makes great artwork, you know, compared to just baseline. So this way, the artwork, it's very representative, but it doesn't really seem to focus quite so much on something, which I actually kind of liked with what the dialogue was.
The entity that is speaking, I'm very confused on where this is. This is good, the good guy, the bad guy. It's very confusing setup. This little 8-page sample is really not enough to judge this on, in my opinion. I really can't make any judgment on this book off of this small 8-page sample.
Well, that one, there's two feelings on this one. Like I said, I went back and read it twice. I liked it better the second time. The way I kind of took this, it was kind of like an illustrated poem, and I didn't see this as a series. The way I took it, it was kind of like a self-contained, you know, 8-page poem that was illustrated. And I liked it, but I kind of saw it as an art project, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to call it, is an art piece.
And it says the end, so I wasn't taking it like there was any more to this. I think basically what they had to say was an 8-page story. Which, there's nothing wrong with that. I have a feeling this creator and the other work, I may be completely wrong here, but it sounds to me like they're going to be doing a lot of self-contained work here and there, even though they're going to be doing it. I don't think this is a series, but I could be wrong. But again, I took this as a poem or haiku or something where they're kind of telling you something, illustrating the whole thing.
Okay.
And,
there's another ad, right?
Well, that was basically, it's a wrap-up page. Kind of neat graphic. They have the logos of each piece and, you know, who they did, who colored it and lettered it. And Onishi Press, Anthology 01. Anyway, sometimes you have a bunch of different logos in one section. It's horrifying. I don't know. It sounds like they got a lot of plans. We lost Rook on their website.
Yeah. So, well, they got a great website. Lots of ways to contact them. Lots of ways to stay in touch with them. It's onishipress.com. onishipress.com. Definitely go check them out. They've got a Patreon. They've got Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Google. Man, these guys definitely know how to use social media.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
oh, they even got a Twitch.
What's a Twitch?
I'll explain it later.
Oh, okay. Anyway, if you're interested, we have the stuff on the blog, the links and stuff. We'll have some examples of what we talk about, unless the publisher says no. All right, all of a sudden somebody showed up, so we're going to have to wrap this up. Anything anybody wants to finish up with?
Read more comics? Oh, wait.
Not yet.
Well, you got anything you want to say?
No, man. I think we said it all for this
show.
Eat
more vegetables?
We will do the other one.
Eat more...
anyway.
Eat more comics?
Eat more comics! There you go.
Eat more comics.
Yeah, it's had... I don't know.
I don't think Don's amused by either of us right now.
It just sounds dry and wouldn't really satisfy you too much. Just read them. Anyway, thanks for listening. You'll hear from us again in a couple of weeks. And in the meantime...
Read more comics!
My name is Mao, and with me as always,
Dr. Morbius.
From Parts Unknown.
Question mark?
This is the promo for Slow Robot A Go Go, the B through Z grade movie review podcast.
That's right.
If it's obscure and you've never heard of it and it's horrible, we're your men.
We're your men.
We're here. We're the dudes that are going to review it and talk about it. And you're going to be like, why would they talk about that? And we don't know either.
And then you're going to want to run out and get these movies and pay big money, Blu-ray money to get these movies because they're all great and you're all going to love them.
But anyway, go to bunchofdorks.com.